All right. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. And I'm really excited today because I am with Justin Satterfield. Justin's the founder and president of Norwood Staffing in Austin, Texas. They are a specialist healthcare revenue management recruiter. Prior to launching his own business in 2016, Justin was a top producer with one of the largest staffing firms in the United States. How are you, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Fantastic. Fantastic. I did a shorter bio this time because you're a repeat guest. I feel like a lot of my listeners will already know you. Our previous interview was published December 2019. And I don't know if you know this, it's one of the top 10 most downloaded out of any of my interviews that I've done. Wow. Yeah, people love that.
That's an honor. I've listened to pretty much all of them, and the guest list you've had on here. I mean, to be among the top 10, like, wow, I'm humbled by that.
Awesome. People love that conversation, Justin. So if you haven't heard it, anyone listening, it's episode number 5. Go back and check it out. And so listen, last time we spoke, we talked about how you built your company to like close to $1 million within the first 3 years. And then 3 months after we had that conversation, coronavirus hit. So I'm dying to know like what happened next at Norwood Staffing.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into that. So yeah, we were really coming off a strong 2019. I was, you know, very excited about 2020. And 2019 was our first year to have a team.
Yes.
My first hires were in Q3 of 2018. So 2019 was my first full year. We grew 504% that year. So going into 2020, I'm pumped, right? Like, this is going to be just an incredible year ahead. And yeah. And do you recall the gal on LinkedIn that kind of attacked you a little bit in regards to making a post about my podcast in which you stated, you know, you don't need to be promoting, people starting their own business. I've been in this business for 25 years and I've been through 3 recessions and, you know, this is not a good time. And I was like, okay. just made it through my first recession for her to know. Rolling into COVID, I mean, Q1, we're averaging 60 plus recs on the board. We're doing absolutely fantastic, really moving along. And then March came, into February, March. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you're in healthcare. So I'm sure staffing was great in healthcare. No, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
If you were doing, some clinical staffing, perhaps, I mean, the nursing space, I know folks were, going up to New York making ridiculous money for that. But, I work on the revenue cycle side of things. And what people don't understand is that, I mean, and one of the reasons that I got into healthcare was because of how recession-proof it was. I have friends in, oil and gas and things like that. I'm like, oh, brutal. But healthcare is pretty steady. Healthcare in Q2 lost over $200 billion. You know, when the government shut down elective surgeries, that was just absolutely brutal. As well as the reimbursement on COVID. I mean, the length of stay and how much care is needed versus the reimbursement. I mean, it absolutely devastated this industry. So you're talking furloughs, pretty much across the board. We went from averaging, over 60 recs to zero jobs in Q2. I think we had a few starts that were from Q1, but no new jobs. In 5 months, we made 6 placements. Lost a 7-figure project altogether that we had already started. We were already a few weeks in. That went completely away. And a third of our contractors. That was pretty tough. I had the mindset going into it pretty quickly that, this is where real business leaders are defined, that there is always opportunity, no matter what the market is. You know, going back to our favorite topic of stoicism, like, I'm sitting here and go, woe is me. Like, oh, the market's tough. Like, okay, we'll do something about it. And so looking at the market, it was completely unrealistic to go, well, let's just double down and make a ton of sales phone calls and like, we'll go find business. Like, there was no business. And it was pretty distasteful to be reaching out to clients other than just checking in on them. I mean, the last thing they needed as they're trying to decide which, you know, employees they're going to furlough or lay off is some staffing recruiter coming like, sure you don't need people? You know, I mean, that's just really distasteful. But, you know, looking at the market and what I wanted to build, Mark, you know, as you know, is a team of just absolute rock stars. You know, that's what I've wanted to build. And perhaps, you know, it will go, that strategy will change. But for me, especially my first 10 core people, I want to be just absolute studs. And it's hard to recruit top producers because they're making great money. You know, they have those golden handcuffs. And, you know, so one thing that really stuck out to me was, this is going to be a great time to hire. Because when does the health care market go down? You know, when do these top producers ever have their book of business drop like this? And a lot of my competitors were, you know, firing people themselves, you know, especially the larger staffing agencies. I mean, tons of people getting laid off. But, you know, I looked at that as an opportunity. So really kind of focused on a lot of operational stuff during that time. But building the team last year was pretty great. So I took the director of recruiting as well as the director of sales for my largest competitor. And then also took the manager from my previous employer as well. So doubled the size of my team. And then we also added a high-level consultant internally that I'm sure we'll dive into here in a bit. But really a cool growth year. And, you know, coming off of 504% growth, it's like, oh, man, you know what? You know, what's going to happen now with this? Mark, we grew 891% last year.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. I really want to get into this with you because I did a similar thing, which is to expand my team in 2020. And but I want to ask you about the mindset of hiring more people when your revenue is actually decreasing. What is going through your mind? Like, talk to me about that, because that's scary, right? Most people would think the opposite. They think, well, we need to just batten down the hatches and ride this out and survive, and then we'll rebuild later when the market picks up. And you didn't do that. You had an almost contrarian approach to this and think, this is the opportunity. This is when we absolutely, like, this is the best time to hire. Talk to me about what you were thinking and then what kind of, you know, what the steps were.
Of course. Well, I mean, that's partly the difference between being owned by private equity and or being publicly owned, reporting quarterly earnings versus running a shop. You know, I've always had the mindset of, you know, I'm still owning 100% of this company, of if I can get this thing off the ground to where I still have complete control over revenue, that we can run really quickly, because I don't care about inflating my lifestyle. I'm pouring, you know, as much back on this thing as I can. So luckily we were positioned to where I didn't really care. I had money, and, you know, so being able to afford people was not the issue. It was just finding the right people that I wanted to bring on board. And, you know, to hunker down. I mean, if you literally can't afford to do otherwise, completely understand. But hopefully you're in a stronger cash position than that. And I mean, really short-sighted to not see the opportunity to hire. And to, I mean, it was just the best opportunity in a long time to hire. So, you know, if you're not looking long term, you know, and I tell everyone that comes here, I'm like, hey, if this is a stepping stone for you, please don't accept this offer. You know, if you're going to come here, I'm talking 5, 10, 15, 20 year commitment. Like, I want people here for the long run. So, you know, and basically at this point, I'm always hiring for the right person, awesome. Whether I need someone or not, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. If the right person comes along, I'm hiring.
That is awesome, man. So 891% you grew this year. Is that in terms of, are you talking just revenue. Headcount or you mean actual revenue?
Revenue.
Wow. That's amazing. Especially given the market we've had. So listen, I'd like to talk to you about what was involved in that. First, let me just support and amplify what you just shared, because I really believe, and this is from my own experience as well, that the biggest barrier or constraint to growing your firm is mindset. And the reason I say that is I took a calculated risk last year, 2020, and hired, somebody became available from a direct competitor. Her name is Leanne Sarah Jones Hunt. And she was and is an absolute superstar. And so I took somewhat of a calculated risk and used, like, there's a lot, I'm sure it's the same in the States. Here in the UK, there was a lot of funding available on amazing terms because of the coronavirus. So we had this business bounce back loan scheme where essentially it was low interest. There was no repayments for 12 months. The government was guaranteeing like 80% of the loan. So it was much easier to get money. So I just used that and invested that to pay land for the first, you know, little while until, you know, we were able to generate a profit. And Justin, that was the best decision I could have ever made. We finished last year strong and took so much momentum into this year. And Q1, we're only 2 months into Q1, is going to be my best Q1 ever. And I've been doing this for 19 years. So that, and
wow.
A huge factor there was hiring Leanne, because she is such a dynamo. That's been a huge impetus for us to be able to expand and reach and impact more people. And looking back, yeah, thanks, man.
Well done, brother.
Well, when I asked myself, why didn't I do this sooner? It was fear. And I didn't even see it at the time, because it's, you know, it's easy to coach other people on this stuff, right? But when it comes to yourself, we have blind spots. And I didn't realize that I had this limitation. And when I analyzed where did this come from, I realized it was, I could trace it back to, like, I had a business failure when I was 19 or 20 years old, my very first business. I hired a bunch of people. I mean, it was only like, it wasn't anything fancy, Justin. I had a painting franchise. I don't know if you have those in the US. In Canada, we had like these student painting franchises. So I had become a franchisee of this company. I hired a bunch of people, bought a bunch of equipment. But I didn't have any management experience. I didn't have any knowledge of accounting and bookkeeping. I really had no clue what I was doing. And it was a disaster. So the lesson I took away from that was, like, hiring people is risky and it's a big hassle. And, you know, if you have a business with higher overheads, then that's not going to end well. So I decided, like, next time I start a business, I'm going to just have no overheads. I'm going to have no employees. It's just going to be me. And I thought that was like the smart decision. But looking back, that was just a limiting belief. And it was really just a justification or like a rationalization to explain away my fear of failing all over again. And so that wound from more than 25 years ago was still limiting me. So when I realized that, then it's like the floodgates have opened and just amazing things have started happening in my business. So
yeah, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. And you know, and you. I believe we touched on this in the first podcast, but you know, my first two hires, I mean, revenue wise, like, they didn't make sense, but I needed to take that risk. And it's always been based around around the right people. And I originally thought I was going to run kind of a solo shop as well, but that changed decently quickly. Of realizing, like, okay, no, this has to grow. I can't build what I want to build on my own. So
yeah, congratulations to you. Awesome. Same to you. Same to you. So talk me through how you went from this, like you said, you went through a whole period where there was zero jobs. You had a few starters. How did you get from there to 890% growth?
We had a really strong Q1 and then a really strong Q4. And then on top of that, we know we did retain about 2/3 of our contractors that were bringing in a good amount of revenue. So we were lucky with that. You know, I mean, I know some bigger agencies that lost, you know, 2/3 of their contractors or more. So, you know, there was a significant drop off for a lot of people. So we got lucky there. And we got lucky that we really started the year strong and that we landed some, you know, a large number of jobs going into Q4 when really the market is still very down. I don't think we'll see a normal market until 2022, hopefully. You know, because the revenue loss and, you know, most of these, you know, most of my clients are multi-billion dollar companies. So, you know, you got public as well. And so, you know, they're still trying to recover. I mean, we still got, you know, one of the top 5 health systems in the nation that I'm working with. I mean, we still have the executive suite at a company that does several billion in revenue. Yet they still have to get a job approval for staff level folks from the COO, from, you know, the executive level. Like, that's not normal. That's not normal at all. So it's still, you know, kind of onesie twosies in that regard, but starting to see it pick up quite a bit. So,
you know, it's fine. You're saying we got lucky and, but then again, I don't think we can put it just down to luck. Like, what did you physically do to make sure that you had as good a Q4 as possible?
Yeah. I mean, obviously stayed, I don't even want to call it sales. I want to call it relationship management. You know, staying in touch with our people, just touching base them, seeing how they're going. But you know, still paying attention to the market, knowing kind of what was going on, paying attention to the leadership shifts and things like that. And, you know, was able to land a couple really good projects. And, you know, it was really just staying in touch with really our existing network, because breaking into new business during that time was pretty unfeasible. I mean, it's already really difficult to get a contract pushed through legal at large health systems when there's no jobs. I mean, good luck. You know, there's not much incentive for them to get all the signatures they need on this of going, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's sign up for a staffing contract. So it was really just sticking with the folks that we'd already built relationships with and you know, vetting that out. And yeah, I mean, really not much more to it. I wish it was more insightful than that.
So you were the beneficiary of all of the hard work that you'd put into over the years up until that point, right? So you'd planted a lot of seeds and you'd watered those and nurtured them. And then that you were able to maintain that and then that became a platform for growth. But when you said keep in touch, like, how did you do that? What you mentioned, you didn't want it to seem too salesy or like you were just asking for business. So how did you keep in touch in a way that wasn't that?
Of course, it's picking up the phone and just having a conversation. You know, I mean, everyone's going through a tough time. So take your sales hat off and be a human. And let's just have a, conversation, you know, be the positive, you know, light in someone's day. You know, it was a grim time. So to, you know, get them laughing and just to make a good connection for them to get off that phone call and be in a better place mentally than they were when they picked up the phone. You know, and I would even flat out say to a lot of the folks, like, hey, I'm not calling about jobs. Like, you know, I just wanted to see how you're doing. And being that transparent about it, that's not what this is about. I'm not even going to ask, you know, did you have to furlough people? I hate that for you. You know, so really just, and being a good listener, right? I mean, that's, you know, especially a lot of people in leadership, and you're going through hardships of having to furlough people and things like that. I mean, to have someone to, just to talk to is valuable. Yeah. So, I mean, that was pretty much it.
I love that, Justin, being the positive light in someone's day. That's, that is not something that I think most recruiters have on their list of call objectives, but it, you know,
is like, that not a KPI?
Yeah, that's an awesome one though. I feel like it should be like maybe on a poster or a whiteboard or something to just keep that in mind on even on a normal sales call. Like if you can have that as one of your objectives, that would be pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It is very fulfilling for someone to get off the phone. Like, I really enjoyed that conversation, you know, or that's, I've never had a conversation like this with the recruiter. Awesome. You know, I love to get people to just try to get on the laugh, you know, try to make it a good time. So I'm one to crack jokes on the phone or kind of catch them off guard and really make it lighthearted. And, I'm really about the, you know, that human connection. Like let's have a conversation, an enjoyable conversation.
So what was the message to your team during all this? Cause you know, that's another factor is you're managing your own emotions in, you know, very tough circumstances, but then also you want to make sure that your team feels supported and that they feel they're not, you know, suffering more than they need to as well. So how did you do that?
You know, when it comes to my team and building this company, I don't get a choice. I'm very ambitious. Like I'm trying to really scale something here. But on the flip side of that, you know, and there's a lot of reasons I started this company, but one of the reasons is just looking at, you know, how short our existence is here. And that if we have to spend X amount of hours of our life working, why can't it be for something? And with people that you enjoy being around and be successful, you can have it all. Why not? Let's create that. And so, you know, when it comes to my employees, I have very personal relationships with all my employees, and individual personal relationships. My relationship with each employee is different, but I spend a lot of time with them. I spend a lot of time checking, you know, a lot of our conversations are just about life in general. You know, I've talked to my staff about philosophy all the time. You know, if they're going through something personally, like, hey, well, you know, let's shift the perspective. Like, what do you, you know, I read this and what do you think about that? And so, you know, I'm constantly wanting to improve their mental health and for them to be in a great mental state of well-being. And the byproduct of that is you're going to be even better at your job as well. But that's not the point. The point is that for me, it is super fulfilling that I am able to empower my employees and for them to live a great quality life. And last year was really tough on my team from a personal standpoint, you know, especially little ones having to, you know, do homeschooling and all that. Brutal. You know, you got a 5 or 6 year old. Like, that's tough. You know, there are no options for daycare or school. Like, it's on you. So, you know, and there were several things that were pretty tough, but it was just, you know, letting them know that this too shall pass, and you know, really just kind of sticking with them on a personal level. And I'll share one of my favorite success stories on that note, Mark. So my one of my employees, her son was 4 at the time, and I love sharing this story. She had not been working for me long. We had just came back from a conference that we did really well at, and you know, kids, they see the world for what it is, right? They're little Buddhas. And she came home and she said, "You know what my son said to me?" "What?" He said, "Mommy, you're different, and I like it."
And she I said, love it.
She said, "He's never seen me this happy before."
Wow.
I was like, That's
awesome.
If you can do that, then you've done something worthwhile.
Absolutely. Wow. That's so powerful. That's amazing. Listen, you mentioned conferences. I know that last time we spoke, speaking at events and attending conferences was a big part of your marketing, you know, strategy to become famous in your space, your sector that you specialize in. Did you do anything virtually that would replace that last year? Like, what did you do instead?
Yeah, I already had a few conferences lined up that I was to speak at that went virtual. Okay. So, you know, I did have several virtual speaking engagements. Personally, not a fan. I just don't get as much from it from a personal standpoint. I mean, especially the recorded ones, you know, some of them are live, but most of them are like recorded sessions. So it's literally just, you know, you and one person, and I'm just going to talk at myself for the next hour, you know, and it's just, I don't enjoy the platform, right? It kind of takes the enjoyment out of it and the engagement from the audience and, you know, talking to people afterwards. And so you kind of lose some of that, but I also think that virtual is here to stay. Yes. So I got to kind of be at peace with that because I mean, here moving forward, there's going to be virtual and there's going to be on site. There will be both. And I think there's a good reach and platform for both. So, you know, I think most organizations will start to cater to both, you know, for that wider reach, for that wider audience. So still had some success in speaking, but I'm very much looking forward to getting back to actual conferences. But
I mean, look, I totally get it. I cannot wait until we can start physically, you know, meeting people properly again. Having said that, I am a fan of this virtual medium, and I started doing teleseminars. It was even before webinars. It was like, I don't know, early 2000s, right? Early 2000s.
I was Mark.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Thanks. So, and I hosted these teleseminars, which was basically like a telephone conference where I would talk about a subject like, okay, guys, today's subject is negotiating your recruiting fee, right? And making sure you maximize your, you know, the value you're getting and so on. And it was so weird because I was used to being in front of a group and you get instant feedback and you can tell if people like are responding or if they look puzzled or whatever. You can, you know, and you can make it interactive much more easily and you can, you know, do exercises. And this was a totally different thing. And I didn't like it at first because it was like you're in a vacuum. You're just talking to yourself. And it was really a strange experience. But then the more and more I did it, it got easier. But secondly, I realized I can reach so many more people when we're doing this through technology instead of in person. And it's a different thing. It's not a replacement for in person. But, you know, I would have to be on the road constantly and I still wouldn't be able to impact as many people as I do, you know, through virtual events. Right. So I think there's definitely place for both, but don't give up on the virtual thing because like you could speak to so many more people than you would ever speak to at a live conference.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. You know, I know that I have to stick with it and, you know, just kind of get over that piece. So, you know, I will continue to do so. But what I'm hoping to see a lot of in the future too is more people live streaming events.
Yeah.
You know, to where, you know, you can't go speak in person, but hey, for a smaller fee to this organization, you know, you can still attend our sessions. I'm hoping there will be a big transition there to where that is very commonplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because cool. Like you said, it was about, you know, reading the crowd. I mean, once you spoke even a few times, if you're decently good at this, like it's easy to read the crowd and to gauge their reactions. Like, you know, if they're, I can tell if I want to dive in a little more or if I just want to completely back out of something, or, you know, if they're getting a little drowsy, I need to, you know, crack a joke. You know, you can read the energy in the room and work with it. Totally. Versus looking at yourself on the computer is not as engaging. I do have one funny story though. So this is for the entire state of California. I'm giving this presentation. It was the first one that I had done virtually. And they had it to where I was looking at myself. And I didn't know how to make that go away. So it was just kind of awkward. It was my first time to just stare at myself while I speak. And it was being videoed. So, you know, and so you got to like maintain being professional here. And for looking at myself for 60 minutes straight and I raised a pup during COVID, a red lab, and he was like 10 or 11 weeks old at the time. And so I was like, oh, this will be an adorable idea, right? So I was like, you know, most speakers, the first thing they try to come up with is, you know, what's my icebreaker? What's going to grab the attention? I'm at home. I get to cheat, you know, so here's my puppy. That's adorable. And, you know, I pick him up and then I put him down. I go on about the presentation. Well, there was a faux plant in the corner, like a tree, that he like pulled down and then just continued to demolish the entire time I'm on this call. And so I'm sitting here like slapping the side of my leg, like snapping at him, like he's a puppy. He don't care. He's having the time of his life. So, you know,
hilarious.
I got this thing. There's just stuff all over the room. And I was like, that was a horrible idea. So
hilarious. There's a
lesson learned for you.
I think, but you know what? That's kind of cool in the same way because you don't have to be all perfect. That's the thing that I think is a positive coming out of this pandemic is the aspiring to be this perfect, you know, presenter and have like a really professional studio and all this stuff. I think people are a lot more real right now because you kind of just have to get on with it, right? And in some ways, I think that makes it easier to relate to other people and to make that human connection you mentioned earlier. So they That's probably true. Liked – could they see the puppy demolishing the tree in the background?
No.
Or?
No? No, they couldn't. But yeah, no, that would have been really funny if they could see that happening. No, they couldn't. But I agree with you, though, Mark, that it was an interesting year for building those personal connections with people and for, you know, just being a little bit more down to earth when you're used to being in a pretty professional setting, whether that's, you know, Skype meetings that I've had for, you know, sure, people will end up stay professional for like the first couple, but then after that, it's like, all right, I'm just gonna be in a hoodie, you know, like
I'm not
putting on a jacket for this Skype call with my basketball shorts, you know. So, you know, it definitely has made it a bit more human in that way, and I think it's just naturally stirred, just conversation, just human to human conversation versus business, you know. So it was good in that way.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So what were some of the challenges that you encountered last year, apart from the obvious, and how did you address those? Like, growing a firm, you know, pandemic or not, there's always challenges, right? What would you say were the biggest ones for you?
Jobs, Mark. Jobs.
Okay.
No, I don't understand. So I say the biggest for me was really reevaluating operations as we're scaling. And so I've spent a lot of time on that last year, as well as kind of coming into this year of, you know, reevaluating the company and understanding that, you know, when we were still really small and I was still really kind of bootstrapping this thing, you know, on a shoestring, that this worked. Mm-hmm. But for a company that's scaling, this is not going to work. I mean, it may work, but it's going to be a pain, and I'm going to be forced to make these changes in the future regardless. Like, now that I can afford to do it, as well as kind of have a little bit of time back to do it, putting those processes in place. So really, you know, getting more robust on the legal side of things, the finance side of things, the tech stack side of things, you know, and I mean, really everything. You know, building out more policies from an HR perspective. So really kind of putting in a lot of those fundamentals. And then also one of the bigger things I did this past year as well, really kind of kicking it off this year, is that I've always wanted to be more than just a staffing company. Staffing's absolutely wonderful. It's a personal preference for me. I would be perfectly content with continuing to build a staffing company. I've always wanted to run a complementary consulting business side by side, just because a lot of people, and I'll hear a lot of your guests on here talk about, you know, how much they're improving the staffing industry or looking in, you know, trying to build staffing technology and things like that. I really enjoy my industry of healthcare. I really want to make an impact on healthcare and this industry. And so, you know, I really pay close attention to what's going on in the industry, kind of where, trying to see where things are going and making moves towards that. So, you know, healthcare overall is moving towards an outpatient setting, right? I mean, so 85% of encounters, according to the CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, here in the States, is outpatient. And then, but COVID just basically fast forwarded, you know, telehealth and outpatient stays. And to that, coupled with technology that's advancing, I mean, even 10 years ago, we couldn't do, you know, outpatient things that we can today. Those were inpatient surgeries. And so outpatient clinical documentation, you know, I basically went and got someone who has one of the oldest programs in the nation, helped basically write the test for this. So really trying to build out, now I want to be able to go to, whether it's providers or large health systems, and you know, do the whole thing, come in, do some audits, make the proposal to the exec suite, help them get that buy-in from the exec suite, because we're showing the ROI, because we're showing the value here, come in, build the program, provide the staffing for it, you know, and really make an impact. You know, that
sounds awesome.
I kind of tailed away from your original question of what challenges did you have, but
so that's all right. Sticking with the idea, then, like, would you be then competing with the consulting firms rather than the staffing firms, like, you know, your Deloitte, KPMG, you know, Bain and Company? You know, there's consulting firms that go in to these healthcare organizations. Would you be one of those, or how, like?
Yeah, I would be competing with them. But you know, I've chosen a very niche space, to be in. And you know, I, it's the same thing as staffing for me. Like, I love competing against the big boys because their overhead's insane. And, you know, and we can come in and too, like, you know, you look at, yes, in staffing, but especially when you're talking about major industry companies, these big companies, they want to sell you out of the box program. And, you know, they don't care because they own a significant portion of the market. And, you know, it is what it is. And that's from a technology perspective as well. But, you know, to come in and really create something unique. And one of the reasons I chose this space specifically is because it is very specific to down to the clinic, down to the provider that you're working with, of how this thing needs to operate. So, you know, there is no out of the box solution. You really got to come into a health system and do true consulting and build a program for them specifically, and how their workflow is going to work and what that looks like. So I chose that specifically, but, you know, I like competing against the big boys. You know, I think there's a space for people like me and players like me to come in and take some of the market share.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So, while we're on that theme, what else are you looking to achieve with Norwood Staffing over the rest of the year and beyond?
Yeah, of course. So currently about to go through some looking at rebranding and, you know, continuing to build out you know, things for scale, and also looking at some technology in the healthcare space as well, and some different partnerships along those lines. So, you know, I'm exploring quite a bit right now, and, you know, if things go as planned with my new consultant, would be to build a team out under her, you know, to where we have a team that's going in and doing these things. So, but, you know, staffing will still be my bread and butter for maybe ever, or at least for the foreseeable future. So, you know, I want these businesses to run, you know, side by side and to help each other and really truly be a complementary business. And one of the same. But yeah, rebranding to just Norwood and kind of dropping the staffing solutions. So working on a new website right now and you know, doing all that. That was always part of my plan. I started with staffing solutions for brand recognition within the industry. I feel like I kind of have that at this point. So I've always kind of wanted to drop that and just go with Norwood. Another fun, quick story for you. So, you know, it's really hard to get short domains. And I was like, what are the chances? You know, let's go see if Norwood.com is available. And so, of course, it's not available, but I'm like, who owns it? So it redirects me to this large company, this, you know, $300 million revenue company. And I see on GoDaddy that, you know, you can pay them 20% and they'll go try to, you know, haggle with someone and get that for you. I'm like, wait, I'm going to pay you 20% for like your $50,000 rep to go try to make a deal for me. Like, turns out I'm pretty decent at making deals. I think I'm going to do something.
Really?
So, I think I'll handle this myself. So, figured out who the CEO was, did some light research on him, reached out to him specifically on LinkedIn, like, you know, with the title Norwood.com, like, hey, congratulations on the recent acquisition. You know, this is what I'm doing. Would be great to own this. And like within a week, got me in touch with his chief marketing officer. And yeah, just waiting to hear back from legal to see if we got the green light. So,
oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so some, just a fun little story there. If you want something, go get
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. Why not? Do you know, I bought the domain markwhitby.com. I'm not really using it, but I bought it from another Mark Whitby in Australia. There's actually a lot of
Mark,
people.
Proposition for you.
Exactly. Yeah. He was freaked out at first when I contacted him and said, hi, I'm Mark Whitby. And so anyway, I said, look, you own markwhitby.com, but you're not doing anything with it. Can I have it? And he was like, well, so I think I paid him a couple thousand dollars or something for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why not go after your ideal domain and see if you can see if you can get it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But yeah, man, it's as far as, you know, moving to the future, just like I said, you know, always hiring at this point. So continue to kind of have my feelers out there for that. And then
just, what does that really mean? Like always, like how many people are we talking about by the end of 2021? Have you got like
ideally I would double in size. I'm hoping to have a team of, we're six right now, hoping to have mm-hmm. a team of, I would say 10 by the end of the year. So I'd like to hire probably four more people this year. But I mean, that may be two people, that may be six people. If the right people come along, I don't care. I care about the long term and building the right team here. So, you know, and most of the people that I want, I actively approach, basically have an introductory conversation and, you know, let them know the door's open, because anyone that I'm going to want it's not going to be an easy decision to leave. You know, they're leaving a big book of business behind. They're facing a non-compete, you know, so, and a career, and typically they're going to be managing a team. So it's not an easy decision. It's not a light decision. It has to be on their terms and their timeline. You know, there's just going to be that one day where they're like, I'm done here. You know, and that's what one things that happened with the manager from my previous employer that happened. You know, I've been talking to him for 2.5 years about coming on board here. But you know, and eventually there's one day I'm done. That's it. So, you know, just kind of getting out there and knowing who you want and just, letting them know that you're interested.
That's interesting, Justin. Let's just, dive into that for a sec, because it is very ironic that the biggest challenge I hear from recruiting and staffing firm owners that's constraining their growth is they're like, Mark, we can't find enough good people. And even though that's what you do for a living, right? It's easier to hire for other people. So
of course,
what is your approach when it comes to hiring? How do you, I mean, you've given us a taste. So it's people, there are people you have already identified and you're proactively going after them, letting them know that you're interested. And then how does it go from there? Like, what is your process? Because just because someone's good doesn't necessarily mean they're right for you, right?
Of course.
And so what does your hiring process look like? Because that's the other thing. Not only are staffing and recruiting firms not good at hiring, but also they've typically got a high churn rate. So what are you doing to make sure that we get the best people and we keep them?
Of course. And I mean, that's always been one of my number one goals here. And from a branding perspective, I think most staffing companies fail at building a strong brand because of the turnover. And I understand the machine works, but I just have no interest in it. You know, and, I want to have that family environment. I want to have that team of people that's been here for a long time. So, yeah, as far as my approach, I mean, one, you know, I pay people well. You know, compensation is really good here, and really competitive, as well as, you know, as this thing builds, you know, I'll be building that even further out to profit sharing and doing some unique things to where there is no better opportunity out there in this space. Like, this is it. You know, if you want a shot at making some serious money, then this is a great home for you. Also, treating people like adults. You know, I tell people, you know, if you need me to manage your day, this isn't the place for you. You know, I don't have an interest in doing so. And I need people that are self-motivated and driven, that don't need that hand holding. You know, and having a, it's funny, I was actually talking to a guy recently that I'm trying to recruit, and he was like, and he's in a bigger environment, and he was like, you know, it is intriguing to the idea of going from working with, you know, essentially a junior college team with all these college graduates to truly working with the pro team. And I'm like, it is. It's a completely different environment.
It's a good analogy.
You know? when everyone here is 7 to 20 years in the business, like everyone here is a pro. Everyone here is a top biller, and being in that environment is pretty awesome, man. I really enjoy it. It's just a completely different environment than your typical staffing agency. And I think that's attractive to your top billers to be a part of that environment. And as far as, you know, vetting these people out, of course, not everyone's a right fit, even if they are a top biller. I mean, I know top billers I have no interest in, whether that's from just stories about integrity or just personality. You know, that's when I had that initial kind of reach out, I'm really kind of, they don't even realize I'm doing this, but I'm really vetting out their personality and philosophy and just kind of who they are as a person. And kind of diving into that. And I really don't have that dialed in to like, here's specifically what I do. I think that's something I'm naturally pretty gifted at, is getting, understanding people rather quickly. And you know, understanding what drives them, what motivates them. But it's something I've always kind of been intuitive with, but that piece is key for me, especially as this culture starting to really form. Mm-hmm. Of it's even easier now of like, would you fit into our culture? Not as much kind of build something around you, but now the culture is really starting to get established, and you know, I'll do whatever it takes to protect that. I will be a smaller company and keep that, because that is fulfilling.
I hear you. That makes a lot of sense. At what stage would you consider growing your own people? Because I have a client that grew a really large contract recruiting business, and the issue they ran into was, number one, exactly as you say, if someone's already got a book of business, they have contractors, they're making, you know, commission on, that is hard to walk away from. So they have to be pretty unhappy with something in their current situation to go through the pain barrier of building that up again. Number two is a finite talent pool. There were only so many people who were the ones that they wanted to go after. And then if you keep expanding, then you run out of the ones who are A, really good, B, willing to come on board with you, C, they're going to fit your culture. So then they got to a point where, do you know what? We have to just, take people with the right mindset, the right attitude, as you say, self-motivated, hunger, drive, resilience, whatever the characteristics are that you're looking for. And we will turn them into the ultimate recruitment consultant. Have you like ever tried that, or is that something you would be open to looking at?
It's something I would be open to looking at. I'm just not sure when. I've always had the idea of get these first 10 people really established and in here. And then from there, I've really thought more about the model of supporting those really top producers versus, you know, starting to bring in more recruiters and more salespeople. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if I can free up their time, if I can maximize their time, if I can bring, you know, bring in account managers for both the salespeople as well as the recruiters, you know, to where they're managing the consultants, they're, you know, these account managers are managing the clients, and you know, to make sure that your top salesperson is selling, that your top recruiter is recruiting, that they're rainmaking. And so, you know, after building out all of that, potentially. And I think, you know, maybe having a model to where you would come in as a recruiting account manager. And if you're really good at it, you know, you kind of get your shot to move up.
Exactly. I'm not sure.
You know, I think one of the difficult parts about recruiting and teaching from scratch is, one, I think it'd be difficult to do remotely. I feel like I would probably need to have some kind of office, at least a training center, because there's just too much to educate someone on. It's the little details in a conversation, right?
Do you know what? I thought that, but I listened to my interview I did with Abid Hamid. I don't know. It was a couple of months back. He is an investor. He works for James Khan, who's a really famous recruitment entrepreneur over here. Do you have Dragon's Den in the US, or that concept where you have like a panel of investors and entrepreneurs come and pitch their idea? Oh, Shark Tank. You guys call it Shark Tank. Right? Okay. Yeah. So our version of Shark Tank is called Dragon's Den. James Caan was, made his fortune recruiting. I think he's worth like £300 million or $500 million, something like that. And, he was on that show, and that's how he became famous. So anyway, he's got a company with Abid Hamid who, and they invest in recruitment startup businesses, right? And I put that to him, and he had a really good answer. I'm not going to, we don't have time to go into it today, but
yeah, of course.
How would you onboard and train people remotely? It was interesting.
Yeah, no, that would be interesting. But I think one of the difficult things that really that's hard to judge is resilience, is grit. That's really tough to vet. And if you don't have that, you will not be successful in this industry.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, that's maybe a subject for another day. One more thing I wanted to ask you, Justin, is, by the way, I love the quote on your LinkedIn profile, day by day, what you choose, what you think, and what you do is who you become, Heraclitus. We talked about stoicism last time. What are you reading these days, or what's the best thing you've read in the last 12 months or so?
Best thing I've read. Let's see here. Probably my favorite business book that I've read last year was Shoe Dog, Phil Knight. Yes. The Story of Nike. Absolutely incredible book.
Yes.
Just power packed with quotes and adventure and, oh man, just, what a fantastic book. Currently reading, The Happiness Hypothesis. I don't really care for the title of the book, but it's essentially marrying ancient wisdom of philosophy and religions with modern day science, and really diving into psychology. I read quite a bit on philosophy, psychology, social psychology. That's been quite interesting. Waking Up, Sam Harris, fantastic book. A couple, as far as business are concerned, though, Rocket Fuel, just finished that. And it really dives into the V and I relationship, the visionary and the integrator. It was recommended to me by another entrepreneur, and it's something I'm kind of having to understand now. And I'm trying to grasp this concept. I've never considered myself a visionary, Mark. I think it's a really strong word. When I hear the word visionary, I'm like, you know, Steve Jobs or Mark Cuban or, you know, the big boys. But, you know, and this book defining what a visionary is, I'm like, yep, that's me. Like for good and bad, you know, the bad parts as well. Like that's definitely me. And it talks about that you really need an integrator, that you need an operations person. So that's something I'm really looking at now. I really do want to find that operations person to take that side of the business over, because it's not a good use of my time. I'm not
absolutely
the best at it. Even though I enjoy learning new things about the business and kind of building that out, there's people that are better at this than me. It's not a good use of my time.
I'm going to read that book. I need that, Justin, but that's what Leanne does for me. And that has been the critical, like that is the rocket fuel for sure. Yeah. Having someone who is ace at that and compliments you. Cause you're the one who's got the vision for the business. And you, I don't know if you find this, like, I have too many ideas that I will never be able to possibly implement.
Mark, but I have now, notes and notes for days on my phone. Like, if I just had people to do all the things that I, thought of, like, wow, I have no idea where I would be right now. One more for you specifically, shout out for you, Mark, is, have you, read, it was called The Trillion Dollar Coach?
I have not.
Trillion Dollar Coach. You got to check that out. So,
I'm going to order it now.
Yeah. So Trillion Dollar Coach is, he was basically the coach for Silicon Valley. So for the Steve Jobs, Larry Ellison, like you name it, like all the big wigs, this was their guy. And what was really intriguing to me about it was like, what we would consider modern day geniuses that they had a coach. You know, even these guys that were at the pinnacle of business, they had a coach. And I was like, interesting. So shout out for you there.
All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate it, Justin. Well, listen, we're out of time, but thank you so much for doing this. I always enjoy our conversations. And
likewise, Mark.
I'll look forward to speaking to you again real soon.
Awesome, man. Enjoy the time. Have a great day.